The following episode may contain inappropriate material. Listener discretion is advised.
Hi, I'm Rebecca Hart Franklin from ISO on Movies, and you're listening to the PVD Cast.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another installment of the PVD Cast. I am your host, John Orlando, and welcome to episode number 162. And it's the middle of summer, and you know what that means. It's time for another visit from movie critic himself, Paul Markov. That's right, Paul joins me on this episode of the PVD Cast to talk about the movies that came out in the first half of this year, from about mid-January till just a couple weeks ago, mid-July. So it's going to be a very cinematic edition of the PVD Cast, but I do want to mention a couple things. Number one, there are going to be a little bit of some spoilers, I suppose, for those folks that haven't seen some of the films that we're going to review. And if that's the case, you know, I apologize. I feel with these episodes with Paul that it's been such a delay that, you know, I'm assuming that most people that wanted to see a film that came out in April has already seen it. You know, it is now the beginning of August, so... But there might be some spoilers, so I just want to warn folks out there. And the second thing that I need to do before we get into the episode is to issue a little bit of a correction, so to speak. You know, I'm a dumbass sometimes, and as you'll hear in the conversation that Paul and I have about movies, I talk about the documentary Batman and Bill, and I totally messed it all up. I don't know what the heck I was thinking. I got Bill Finger confused with his son Fred, and the fact that Bill had a granddaughter named Athena. And so I apologize for that. When I start talking about that particular documentary, I'm talking about Fred Finger, who is the son of Bill, who was a gay man but did have a marriage and had a daughter, Athena. And then the Fred and his wife broke up. And so I totally got things messed up. Hey, you know what happens to the best of us? People make mistakes, you know, we're human, that's what we do. So I'm not going to waste any more time because it is a little bit of a long episode. It clocks in at about 59 minutes, so I'm going to get right to the Audible ad because, as you know, today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and a free 30-day trial at audibletrial.com/PVDcast. There are over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, tablet, iPad, or MP3 player. And for you, the listeners of the PVD Cast, Audible's offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial to give you the opportunity to check out their service. And as I mentioned, time is of the essence, so I'm not going to bother you with any more details. You know the drill. You know what you need to do. What you need to do is to go to audibletrial.com/PVDcast to get your hands on a free audiobook and a free 30-day trial. So with that, I'm going to throw it to a quick break, and on the other side of the break, I am joined by Paul Markov. We're going to talk about movies. All right, ladies and gentlemen, sitting down here, ready to talk some movies with Paul Markov. Paul, how are you doing?
Good, good. Thanks for having me back.
Yeah, you're welcome. And you know what? You are now in the world of podcasting, are you not?
I am.
So tell us a little bit about the podcast.
Myself and my current co-host of the film review program now playing on WOCC-TV, based out of Westerville, is now defunct, and we've taken our show onto the radio. Well, not the radio, on the internet. What am I talking about? I'm showing my age now. We've titled it Filmbound.
Okay.
And we talk about, normally feature one film per podcast, and then we'll discuss one film, but then we'll either provide recommendations, one apiece for each of us, or we'll discuss kind of a hot topic in the world of film or theater.
Okay, cool. And where can folks find out about the podcast? Like, you guys have a website, correct?
Yes, filmboundpod.com.
There you go.
All right. So are you enjoying being on the interwebs out there?
I am. Podcasting? I am. It's nice to kind of have the freedom to use as much time as you want.
Right.
We were doing a half-hour program. We were doing typically four, sometimes five films a show. So there were constraints time-wise to how much we could delve into the film.
Right.
With having a podcast, you can talk as much and as in-depth as you want. And I like that freedom. It's nice.
Yeah. All right. We'll also talk a little bit more about film pod, where the social medias and all that jazz here at the end.
So, that'd be great.
All right. So for those folks that are just tuning in for the first time ever, this is how it works when Paul visits. What we do is we kind of go back to the very beginning of the year, because I think the last time we talked was early January.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. So we're going to kind of talk about some of the films that we've seen, some of the big movies that came out between that time frame of early, mid-January till recently here, which is the end of July. So that's how it's going to roll. Paul's going to give us 2 cents on some of those films, same here. So shall we go in release order like we normally do?
Sure.
Okay. So Black Panther was the big movie of February that came out. Your thoughts on Black Panther?
It's one of my favorite movies of the year.
Really?
I was very impressed. To be honest, since he's kind of a secondary hero in the Marvel Universe, I wasn't expecting much. It's probably next to... And I'd probably put it right up there. I like the original Sam Raimi, the first Spider-Man.
Yes.
And Spider-Man 2 from Sam Raimi. Probably more so than the more recent Marvel fare. I think this is as good as any Marvel film that's been released.
I give it an A because I agree. I gave like no interest or hardly any interest whatsoever when they first announced the project. And then as they started dropping those trailers, you know, I was like, wow, that looks really good. That action scene looks cool. And so I got my interest peaked a little bit, went in. It was fantastic. It really was. I think it added depth to a character that, being a comic book geek, I was like, I don't really care about Black Panther. Woo, he's the guy in Africa. Who cares? You know, he has his own tribe. But they really, I think, did a great job of making you care about these characters and giving a little bit of depth. The villain could have had a little more depth to his character, but he was, you know, he was satisfactory in that.
Yeah,
Michael B. Jordan.
I thought across the board, there's more to this than your standard comic book fare.
Correct.
In addition to adding a lot more empathy, I thought there was a decent amount of empathy for, I don't recall what Jordan's
Killmonger.
Killmonger. Okay, right. Yes, right. Yeah. So I liked him. I thought it gave air to his voice, which you don't often get. I liked the substance and the context of obviously the movement behind Black Panther.
Yeah.
I liked how you got change of scenery. Was it Compton?
Oakland. Yes, Oakland. Then you also got a little bit of Asia in there somewhere, and then there's the African continent as well. Yeah, yeah. And the action was great, too.
Yes. As a flat-out action film, it's terrific.
Yeah.
But it was nice that there was a bit more substance in the storyline, a bit more thematic depth, with the subtext. And then also, I liked how, it felt generally suspenseful. The fact that most of these Marvel told stories, or even the DC ones, you know, everything is at stake.
Yeah.
And if the world or the universe is at stake, in general, the universe and the world is going to exist afterwards. So by narrowing the story down to,
the narrow focus of
just the two,
the
Killmonger,
two, yeah.
And Black Panther himself, and, a few, supporting characters, it felt like there was something on the line here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, somebody could lose their life. And, by making it more character-centric, you felt more for the characters if they were going to lose their life.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Overall, very well done. I was very, 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 very pleased with it. So I gave it an A. What did you guys give it on the show?
We don't do grades on the program.
Oh!
But
okay.
Dating back to now playing, if I were to give it a grade, I would have given it an A-.
Okay. Then we're going to move along to a movie which I believe was released late March, early April, Death Wish.
Did not see it.
Passed. Well, then, you know what? That was a wise choice, my friend, to pass. I made the mistake, And I say this because I think I shouldn't have done this. I watched the original on like a Thursday night, and then went Friday night, went and saw the Bruce Willis version. Man, this movie, I gave it a D. I gave it a D because I will say that I give credit to Bruce Willis because he did really drive home Paul Kersey being a family man. Because I think in the original, that was the one thing that kind of was lacking. And I know people would say, well, in the 1970s, fathers and husbands didn't show their compassion in that, which is true. And I would say that I'd take that with a grain of salt. But this one, just Bruce Willis felt more like he was a loving husband and father. I liked the updates that they made in that, you know, they tied in social media. Paul Kersey was an emergency room doctor. That's it. The rest of the movie is awful. It's so predictable and over the top for no reason. It's bad. It was not a good film. Not a good film.
I want to say Eli Roth.
Eli Roth was the director. You're correct. It was written by Joe Carnahan, who I like Joe Carnahan, yes, but
I do not like Eli Roth.
Okay.
And I'm pretty sure, looking at his filmography really quick, I know he did Hostel.
Yes.
Which I despise.
Okay.
And I don't say that about many films. Most films don't give me that route up that I despise them. But Hostel's one of them. And, you know.
The Green Inferno, which is very controversial when it came out as well. Cannibal film that sparked some controversy, if I remember, just for the over-the-top violence in it, if I remember correctly.
The only other one I saw of his was Cabin Fever, and that wasn't very good either.
Okay, so, well, there you go. Death Wish was not very good. So, there you go. You were smart to pass on that one.
Yeah, I was going to say, since we're only essentially reviewing one new release for each podcast, I've narrowed down even more so
the films that
we're seeing in theaters.
I gotcha. Then the next thing I have chronologically would be Deadpool 2.
I enjoyed it.
I did too. Here's the thing that I have been noticing more and more, and Deadpool 2 is one of those examples. Do you notice with especially these action films, we're seeing things in the trailers or in the previews that aren't in the actual film? Because I know that...
I've seen it from time to time.
And they did a fine example because I think in Deadpool 2, they kind of tried to kind of made some of the... At least one trailer appear that X-Force, all the extra, you know, Domino and Shatterstar and Gary... they all seem to have a bigger part in the film, according to the trailer, but they really didn't, other than just dying comedically in the film.
Yeah, no, it's a very... I enjoyed that part.
I did, too.
To be honest, the most enjoyment I took from the film was the X-Force themselves. I thought that was pretty clever.
And
most of all, very funny.
Yes, yes. I liked it. I liked it. I liked the first one. I think this one is more of the same. You know, I mean, if you're going to...
You're either with Deadpool or you're not with Deadpool. And if you're not with Deadpool, you have no business seeing Deadpool 2.
Correct, yeah. Personally, my favorite line was just really... It was dumb and nobody... It's a throwaway line, but just 2 days prior to seeing the movie, I was talking to my cousin. We had this conversation about how in the 70s, in comic books, if you had an African-American superhero, they just threw black in front of his title. You know, Black Goliath or, you know... And when Deadpool said to Domino, thank you, Black Canary, I busted out laughing because I'm like, it's just so, you know, just we just talked about that. And I was the only one, I think, that laughed in the theater when he said, thank you, I said Canary, I mean, thank you, Black Widow. That was what I thought was hilarious. And I thought the bonus scenes were pretty funny, too, very tongue-in-cheek, especially the one with Ryan Reynolds getting the Green Lantern script. And tightening up.
I'll be honest, I did not stick around.
You did not stick around? Oh, those were hilarious. Ah, oh, Paul.
At least I don't remember if I did.
Okay.
I'm trying to remember what happened during the credits.
So
normally in the Marvel films I do.
Okay.
So I don't know, maybe I left, came back in. I don't recall the Green Lantern script though, I can tell you that. But normally there's a tie-in to the whole Marvel universe.
Right, yeah, sure. But this one, well, there was a bunch of different extra scenes at the end of Deadpool 2. So there's one where apparently Ryan Reynolds gets the Green Lantern and Deadpool swings around the corner and shoots Ryan Reynolds. So he doesn't do the film, you know, ha ha ha.
I would remember that.
I think he says something about tightening up the timeline or something. But overall, I liked it. I gave it an A. I really thought it was a fantastic sequel to Deadpool. One that probably is right up there with the original. And you can't say that oftentimes when it comes to movies.
No, a lot of the times the sequels aren't as good as...
Correct. So do you have anything from February, March, April before we jump into the...
I'm a little loose on when these came out.
Okay.
But there's an indie film. Now, this one did come out early. It's called Thoroughbreds.
I heard about this, and it got a lot of buzz. Did you like Thoroughbreds?
I did. It's very twisted. It's a dark, dark comedy, dark suspense thriller. It's an oddball. Again, it's an indie film about two girls, high school age girls who were previously friends. They've kind of reunited as one's going to tutor the other. One has some psychological issues.
Okay,
I suppose they both do to a certain extent. The one girl is living with her stepfather, and she doesn't care for him. So one of the girls suggests that they knock him off. And it goes from there. But it's pretty twisted. It's pretty funny in spots. It's probably most known, to be honest. I think it's Anton Yelchin's final. Final film that was released.
He
passed away, few years back.
Right.
And he's the funnier portions of the film.
Okay.
His moments. But yeah, it's pretty good. I mean, it's now obviously streaming and on Blu-ray and DVD, and that'd be one to check out if you're into something
cool.
a little off the beaten path.
There you go. Cool. Let's see. Anything else in that time frame? Because we're just gonna jump into May and
Most of these spill more into big movie season, whether it's art house or
mainstream. Right, sure. Well, I think the big one that came out here, if I have the chronology correct, Avengers Infinity War, which I thoroughly enjoyed. I loved it. I thought it was a very good... Out of all the Avenger films, I think it was probably one of the best, with a very good tail to it. Did you like Infinity War?
I did, and actually... Okay. To me, it's kind of a backhanded compliment saying it's the best of the Avengers films.
Right, yes.
I didn't care for the other two Avengers films.
Right, yeah.
And due in large part because there didn't really feel like there was anything at stake.
Right.
And a lot of the action was swooping and, there was no real suspense or tension. Here, it feels like there's something on the line.
Yes.
And it feels like when the action is playing out that there's something at risk at the end of this.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess from that aspect, it felt a lot more suspenseful, thrilling, and rewarding, even though, obviously, it's much darker than the other Avengers films.
Two things that I was very impressed with. One, I was afraid that they would spend a lot of time in the exposition about who these people are, who these heroes are, and I'm glad they didn't.
Yeah, you don't have time.
You don't have time, exactly. But I was afraid of that happening. But most importantly to me, I thought that Thanos's motives were very fascinating. If you have an overpopulation that is going to eliminate or make your life on your planet somewhat difficult, like in his mind, let me just back up. There's an old adage in professional wrestling that heels, bad guys, if they believe what they're saying in a promo, that makes them much more relatable. And I felt like that was the way with Thanos, as he was... The character was really believing that what he was trying to do was right.
Yes. Although, obviously, he was...
obviously, he was wrong. Right. And I think,
morally bankrupt.
Right. But I think,
there was he had conviction, which a lot of the time, he wasn't just...
I don't know why that was so hard to explain,
And he was very contemplative, too.
Right,
He would sit and think, and it wasn't like he was rash in his decision, and he felt like what he was doing was... Essentially, in a very demented and distorted way, kind of justice for all.
Yeah.
Most villains we get are in it for their own,
own
pleasures or their own selfish needs.
Correct.
It didn't feel that way for his character.
Right. And I mean, even though I think that I am not dumb enough, and I'm sure you're not dumb enough, and there's lots of people that are not dumb enough to believe that all the people that perished are going to remain dead. We know that that's not going to happen. It still was nice to see that. You know what I mean?
It still felt like there was something heavier on in the picture, even though, yes. I mean,
That Black Panther's not dead because they've already greenlit the second one.
And it made how much?
Yeah.
And it made internationally.
Right.
Same would go to a certain extent with Spider-Man.
Correct, yeah. But overall, I thought it was a fantastic film. Again, I gave it an A. I really, really liked it. In fact, I can't wait to watch it a second time. So I've only gotten to see it once, but I want to watch it again, see what I didn't pick up on, you know, from the first go round.
It was good. I was thankfully surprised because, again, I kind of everyone else seems to love the Avengers films. I don't think they're bad. I'm just kind of underwhelmed by them.
Okay.
This one, I think it delivers on what it promises.
Yeah, exactly. Next would be, and I won't lie to the listeners at home, I already know how you feel about this film because I listened to the episode of Filmbound, but Solo, a Star Wars adventure. What's your take on Solo?
I was disappointed.
Really?
It felt inconsequential. I was more or less bored with the storyline. You know, again, this is one where you know the outcome of the main players. It felt kind of like creatively they could kind of do whatever the heck they wanted to in coming up with the connections between. I mean, I like some of the connections.
Yeah.
But I don't know that there was anything that was tied in that they couldn't just kind of make up on a whim. Like, I liked how we found out how Chewbacca met Han.
Yes, that was good. I liked that. Yeah, that was good.
But there are some other, again, kind of secondary stuff that...
Do you think they tried to...
Like, for instance, how he got his name.
Right,
like,
that was stupid, too. But
yeah,
but,
like, I don't really... It could have just been his name, and that would have been fine.
Yeah.
My name's Paul Markov. His name's Han Solo, you know.
Well, that's what a friend of mine said. Do you think that his gripe was they tried to explain everything and not just leave some things as mystery? You know, and I think my friend makes a valid point on that. I think in a lot of these movies, especially ones that are based on comic books or, you know, in this case, Star Wars, that we have to explain everything. We have to explain everything so that there's no whole... Why not? Why not, like, you know, when Star Wars first came out, not everything was explained. There was some mystery left to us to kind of think for ourselves on and contemplate and argue and debate about.
Sure.
But it seemed with this one, they wanted to explain everything. And I think that was my only gripe that I had about it was we had to explain how he got the Millennium Falcon, how the Kessel Run worked, how he got his last name, how he met Chewbacca, how. And it's I didn't think you needed to do that. However, though, with that being said, I gave it a B. I felt that the acting was good. I thought that Donald Glover did a fantastic job as Lando Calrissian. I thought I was watching Billy Dee Williams.
He was good.
He was very good. I think, what's the Han Solo's name? Is it Aaron Reich? I can't pronounce it, but that guy.
Alden.
Sorry, what did I say? Aiden? Alden.
That's the one we can't pronounce.
Well, he did. Alden, I think Ellen he did Reich, a pretty I decent think, yeah. job. The Solo.
I think it's hard when you're stepping into, you know, such a historical and monumental figure like Han Solo.
True.
That's been established by Harrison Ford to kind of make that character your own. Because, in essence, the character... I mean, as far as I'm concerned, the character isn't his. I guess I didn't realize it until I actually watched the film. You know, that I was going to have an objection with the character just because he didn't embody Han Solo the way I felt Han Solo was. Now, granted, you know, this is Han Solo before, you know, he's...
And see, that...
How many years before? But.
That's why I think I kind of cut the guy some slack, because I'm like, this is young Han Solo. You know, this is before he's older and before he's wiser, and I'll use that term loosely, you know, from... To me, he still had that air of cockiness, but yet some maybe confidence issues that I would assume that many young men may have when they're out there in the real world. So I cut him some slack for that, is that I didn't expect him to give the same style of performance that Harrison Ford did. But I didn't have any problems with what he presented to us. I thought he did an admirable job. It wasn't 5 stars, but it wasn't 1 star either.
Yeah, his performance itself was not bad.
Mm-hmm.
But I have a hard time because, to a certain extent, if they're going, you know, he is playing Han Solo, there's going to be the natural tendency, which I'm doing, to compare it to the Han Solo
that
I know and love.
All right.
And he didn't reach that standard for me. I did think one of the bright spots was Emilia Clarke as Kira. I thought she was good. I thought she was a strong,
yes,
strong figure,
yeah,
and added some, I guess, a little bit of tension. I mean, mm-hmm. you more or less know which side she was going to lean to, but
yeah.
I thought, you know, it added a little more than
a little more spice to what was essentially a heist film. I mean, let's be honest. That,
right.
It was a heist film. She added a little something to it, if you will. So, I mean, overall, I feel bad that people are being so hard on Solo because it didn't make $500 trillion, you know, like well, they projected it to make. But, you know, like I said, I thought it was a movie that was a solid B. Could have been better, but I think it was not too bad.
It was okay. I wouldn't quite recommend. I think where people, and I don't know, again, I'm speculating on the box office at this point, but I'm guessing it's people, at least I feel to a certain extent, I felt this way originally when they came out with Rogue One, although I think the majority of people enjoyed Rogue One, and I think that did much better at the box office than Solo.
Yeah.
Is I think they feel that they're using this as kind of a money grab. How many different side stories are you going to go off on to you know,
well, true.
To make another dollar.
That's true. Very true.
You know.
Because, I mean, you got Rian Johnson off doing his own independent Star Wars films, which to me, right there, would feed into that theory. You know, why do you need those? Keep it to the main universe we all know and love. Who cares about whatever characters you create over here? So I can see where you're coming from with that. Yeah, most definitely.
And I would also argue, if you can't succeed box office-wise with Han Solo, you're probably going to have some problems with some of these other films.
Yeah, probably. You're right.
Like there's the Boba Fett film that's in the works.
But there's always been the rumor of the Obi-Wan Kenobi movie, too, which, I don't know. It's a good. Maybe, too, it's oversaturation. Maybe we've seen too many Star Wars films, you know, because we've had Last Jedi. We've had Rogue One. You know what I mean? Like The Force Awakens. Maybe there's been too many. You know what I mean? Maybe that was part of the magic because, you know, there were, 3 years in between Star Wars and Empire, and then there was another 3 years, 4 years, actually, I believe. 83 or 84 was Jedi.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you have that space in what, 3-4 years, we've had almost 4 Star Wars films.
And they seem less significant by cramming them together.
Exactly. So maybe that's part of it, too. I don't know. What do you have that's in between the May, June here? I have a few more here on the list, but what do you got?
Because none of these films came out.
All right, let's just throw them out.
These are more towards, these are more June releases. All right. Probably my favorite film of the year is the Fred Rogers documentary, Won't You Be My Neighbor.
That's on my list, too. I gave it an A. I loved it. Yeah. What'd you love about it?
I like that essentially what you saw is what you got out of Fred Rogers.
Mm-hmm.
That the man that was on the camera was the man that was known as a great father, a great husband, you know, and someone that was really trying to impact individuals. And I knew, I'm Presbyterian, I knew he was a Presbyterian minister. But it's nice to see that his sermons essentially came out of Mr. Rogers. And he didn't have to invoke, you know, scripture and, you know, use the term God or Jesus or even Christianity.
Mm-hmm.
But that it showed through in his actions, mm-hmm. you know. And to me, that's his best work of all.
But see, I also think that I liked that, as you said, what you saw is what you got with Fred Rogers. But I think there was a little bit of that they showed in that documentary behind the scenes. Like, for an example, you know, when he made the joke, remember they had the one crew member that took the picture of his rear end? And then Fred totally didn't let him know that he knew about it and then gave it to him as a Christmas present.
That's
hilarious. Like, he has a sense of humor because, I'm going to be honest, I mean, I watched Mr. Rogers as a kid, like, I wouldn't expect that type of humor out of him. You know what I mean? Like, I gotcha, man. You know, that's a heck of a joke, man. That's one heck of a joke.
Yeah, he was a square guy. So you wouldn't have thought that he would have had that in him.
Right. And so I thought that was very interesting. I also thought, sadly, I think that the other thing that I recognized or pulled out of the documentary was that I feel like Fred Rogers knew how society worked and knew how that industry worked. Case in point, with who was the officer's name? I can't remember his name. Not McFeely, because he was the... But you know who I mean. The African-American police officer who was he was a gay man.
Right.
And when he told the story about, you know, being seen out and about at different clubs, and it got back to Fred, and Fred and him had to have that conversation where he said, look, if you are in those clubs again, you're going to be fired because we'll lose sponsorships and all that jazz. And to me, that showed, again, that Officer Clemens was his name. I knew it would come to me. And you looked it up. So never mind. You looked it up. But to me, when they had that bit of the documentary, I'm like, wow, okay, so Fred Rogers did really understand how this worked. He wasn't so blindly naive.
Right, to think
to
that...
To think that, you know, because,
it's,
I mean...
It's, in some ways, it's sad because yes. everything that he was preaching on the right. show...
In reality, you couldn't implement.
Right, because yeah. as he felt, and I'm sure at the time, unfortunately, you know, where we're at in our society yeah. is it would have ended the program.
Yes, right, right.
And I think Officer Clemens understood that.
Right, totally. But I like that complexity a little bit. That was what I enjoyed about the documentary the most, was you were seeing... Dare I say all sides? I don't want to, you know what I mean? Where
right,
it's, it was more fair and balanced where you're seeing, you know, and I don't want to call that bad that, you know, Fred said, hey, you can't be yourself. But I mean, it kind of maybe is.
I mean, essentially, that was much of what he was saying.
Yeah, that wasn't what he was saying.
To be yourself, that everyone's
right.
special.
Right. So there was that oxymoron, like, you know, yeah. that dichotomy there that I enjoyed. And like I said, the jokes and then, you know, but also too, seeing how, you know, how. He dealt, especially when they talked about 9/11, how he dealt with that particular situation. Overall, I really liked the documentary. I thought it was a great, great documentary.
Yeah, I hadn't remembered, and I think some of it predated, well, obviously it predated me, is how he'd handle some of these assassinations, mm-hmm. that he would actually address what an assassination was with yeah. the children. And just the tact that he was able to take, you know, normally I have... two young daughters,
yeah,
and normally I would not want to. I try to shelter them from those type of things. Mm-hmm. I mean, he tackled it head on,
yeah.
on his program, and yeah. it was amazing how, you know, he addressed the issue while still being, you know, able to handle the kids mm-hmm. with a certain amount of sensitivity.
Mm-hmm. Well, what else is on your list there?
Another independent film called Leave No Trace. Mm-hmm. It's got Ben Foster and a young up and coming actress. It's about he's a war veteran who he and his daughter are homeless and they reside in an Oregon state park.
Huh.
And eventually they're found out by the authorities.
Okay.
They're found by park rangers, but the authorities come in.
Sure. Yeah.
And they
not that park rangers don't have authority. They do.
Right.
It's not like we're saying.
They can't cuff you and stuff you, though, the park rangers.
No, they cannot. Anyways.
So they take back the father and daughter, and one, they have to, you know, do a psychological evaluation
okay.
to make sure that he's,
okay.
you know, a acceptable parent.
Okay.
You know, there aren't other things that are going on, and then they try to assimilate them into society with a farmer and whatnot. And he is, and again, it doesn't delve too much into his, you know, post-war problems,
mm-hmm.
but you understand that's had a great impact, and he's mm-hmm. withdrawn from society. And his daughter initially is, you know, is fine with how they're living. I mean,
really?
he's providing. I mean, it's more or less. I mean, they're homeless. Obviously, they're living at the park.
Right, right, yeah.
But I mean, all the things that they have, he provides for shelter,
food,
clothing. Yes.
Huh.
So originally, there's, you know, you're to view it from their viewpoint, and that, you know. Can't they just leave these people alone?
Mm-hmm.
But of course, as you see the things that the daughter's missing out on, and she starts to recognize what she's missing out on, you know, we understand, you know, what route they're supposed to go. But I mean, it really gets under the skin of these two characters, particularly Ben Foster's character as the father, and it's very effective.
I got to be honest, I've never heard of this film. It doesn't ring a bell at all, but Ben Foster, who was, last time we saw him, he was in what, Hell or High Water? I believe it was the last
That's the last time I remember him being in a
yeah,
film.
Yeah, I was going
to
say.
Wow, I mean, you want to talk about a change of scenery film-wise or performance-wise.
Oh, yeah, most definitely.
I mean, he's on the, I mean, his performance in Hell or High Water is more what we've come to expect out of Ben Foster.
Yes,
he's kind of
yeah,
hot
yeah.
Temperature. He couldn't be any different.
Really?
And Leave No Trace.
Excellent. Excellent. Yeah, and I think it was also... I first saw him, I believe, in The Punisher with the Thomas Jane.
Oh, okay.
Well, I'll have to check that out. The director
Yeah, the director is Deborah...
Kranich?
Kranich, yeah, who directed Winners. I don't know if you saw Winner's Bone, which is Jennifer Lawrence's breakout performance.
Yes,
so some
yes.
are speculating that his daughter in the picture, who actually goes by the same name that... She goes by Thomason in real life. He shortens in the movie to Tom, but Thomasin McKenzie, this could essentially, you know, could be her breakout performance.
Yeah.
She's terrific in it.
And Wilner's Bone also had somebody else that was a real powerhouse actor in that, too. Shoot, I can't remember who it was. But, okay, but nonetheless, all right, I'm familiar with with the director in that, so. I have on here because I saw it because a friend of mine bought it for $3. And this ought to tell you that it came out in June and... Or no, I think it came out at the end of May, actually. And then he bought it by the end of June on DVD. This ought to tell you what a quality film it was. I saw The Hurricane Heist.
Okay.
I gave it an F.
All right. I didn't see it, but I guilty kind of wanted to see it just because it's... Insane.
Unless, right, unless you go into it going, it's a bad movie, and then it's an A, because it's fantastic in that aspect. Yeah, it was, I guess I got to mention another podcast on my own podcast here, but it was a highlight for How Did This Get Made, and my buddy bought the DVD, because as I said, it was $3, and he's like, they're going to have an episode of it, I'm going to spend the $3 so I can watch both. And actually, he and I both remember commercials for this movie. I didn't think it ever came out. I thought it got bumped back.
You went
back.
Straight to video, or?
No, I did some research. It went into the. It went it in for 1 week and tanked miserably. And so, it went straight to DVD.
Hurricane Heist. With a title like that, how could you go wrong?
Hey, Maggie Grace, a Worthington native, who I think was on Lost.
She was on Lost.
Yeah,
yes.
Worthington native. She was the star.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's a fantastically awful movie.
See, now that kind of mixes maybe this fucking segue into another film that kind of has crazy things going on.
All right.
And I thought would be much more fun.
Okay.
I'll be honest. I'm a big fan of the dinosaurs. Is Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom, where, you know, you have a heist going on, a hurricane going on, in Jurassic World, they're trying to assist dinosaurs in the midst of a volcano.
Right. Yeah. And you did not enjoy this one.
I enjoyed that portion of it. I thought that was going to be kind of the culmination of, you know, that would be the climax, but that takes place in about the first, I mean, it takes place in the first hour of the picture. I was kind of disappointed that they go to the mainland and then they put all the dinosaurs in cages for most of the rest of the film.
See, I haven't seen the first, I call them the Chris Pratt films. I haven't seen the first Chris Pratt Jurassic World. So I'm a little bit behind on those. And it's not like I have anything against the franchise. I've seen the original and I've seen three. I never saw two. Okay. I don't know why. I don't know how that happened. I have no clue. But I never saw two. But I haven't seen the new ones. Okay. I don't know.
I really enjoyed Jurassic World.
Okay.
Yeah, I thought it was a nice reboot of the series. I mean, it has kind of all the grandeur and everything that, well, it's a younger man, I was anticipating out of Jurassic Park.
Okay.
I love the original Jurassic Park. But I even remember, as much as I enjoyed the original Jurassic Park upon my first viewing, I was still a little disappointed because I was under the impression that the park was going to open. So, of course, in Jurassic World, the park does open. And I enjoyed it from that aspect and the fact that, you know, I have all this majesty of, you know, there's dinosaurs to the left, dinosaurs to the right, and then, of course, what happens when?
Dinosaurs run amok.
Dinosaurs run amok when the park is open. It gets even crazier,
Gotcha. You know, here's another segue. Speaking of films I thought were going to be more fun, but weren't, Ant-Man and the Wasp.
I enjoyed Ant-Man and the Wasp.
I didn't.
I actually didn't care for the original. I thought the original was kind of disappointing,
The original one I liked. This one, I didn't hate it. I felt that the villains were just so wishy-washy. Like, and maybe it's because I'm coming off of Thanos and, you know, Infinity War, where he wasn't wishy-washy, you know?
No, that's a fair criticism, because typically these type of films are heavily reliant upon having a strong villain.
Right.
I would say this is the exception to the rule.
Okay.
Because the real villain is, what's it called? Where is Michelle Pfeiffer trapped? What's that called? I don't know what the technical term is.
The quantum realm.
Yes. But the quantum realm is kind of the villain because they believe she's trapped in the quantum realm. That's the real obstacle in the entire picture. That, and of course, him making sure that he's at home.
Right, for his house arrest.
Yes, before his house arrest is over. The reason why I think Ant-Man and the Wasp is a lot of fun, as opposed to the first one, and I don't think the first one, it was too much into developing, you know, his backstory and who the character was. Normally I don't have problems with those things. Normally I enjoy those portions. And that would have been fine in the first one, too, if it had taken advantage of his size and kind of running rampant with that. I thought it was going to... I enjoyed growing up Honey, I Shrunk the Kids. And I thought they'd have a little more fun with that in the original. Here, he's getting big, he's tiny, sometimes he's enormous, sometimes he's toddler-sized. I thought they did a really good job of toying with the conventions of not only making him big and small, but the Wasp had the power to make other items big and small.
Right.
So it really kind of... they went kind of wild with it, and I enjoyed that aspect.
I thought the performance of Lily was good.
And
Paul Rudd was good too in it. Like I said, I love Walton Goggins. I do as an actor. I think he's fantastic. But just like he was a waste in the movie. I'm like, you could have plugged any actor into that role as the bad guy. You know, what was his name? I can't remember what his name was. But anyways, and I just felt the other ghost, the other villain wasn't. Again, it was kind of like, you know, like, I just wanted something stronger, and I feel like they could have stuck with Ghost's story and kept her the same if Walton Goggins' character had been much more maniacal.
Yeah, I thought she was fine. I mean, I think it's an interesting, for lack of a better term, villain, because she doesn't really amount to, in the end, much of a villain.
Right.
They just didn't give much substance to the character herself. Plus, again, to me, the main plot here... is trying to get their mother back. And to me, that's enough story to tell. And, you know, mix in all of the, you know, you needed, how's it, Goggins?
Goggins, yeah.
Goggins, you can mix that in to create, you know, you need
some tension.
Yeah. And to be honest, to create some action scenes.
Right, yeah.
Which,
yeah.
Again, probably one of my favorite action scenes this year is that downtown chase scene where they're kind of toying with the conventions of sizes.
And
they have a lot of fun with it.
Right. Yeah, I gave it a B. I didn't, you know.
That's what I would have given.
Yeah, I just thought it could have been more. It could have been a little bit more, but, you know. So all the other films did you have on your list?
I actually crammed in a couple, two last night.
Oh,
so I could get them done before the podcast today. The new Mission Impossible Fallout.
Okay.
It's very good.
Is it? All right.
I would say it's probably maybe the second or third best of the Mission series. I still like Ghost Protocol to me is still the top of the hill as far as Mission Impossible. This one's, the action scenes are really good, not quite to the level of Ghost Protocol, but again, and I can't remember what the previous mission was. There's so many missions these days.
I was going to say, how many Mission Impossibles are there now? I was trying to have this conversation. Is Fallout the seventh one or the sixth one? That's a great...
I don't know. My fingers aren't moving fast enough here on the movie database. the previous one, this one is more concerned kind of with the plot mechanisms, the twists and turns and, you know, who's operating under which government agency and who's working with the bad guys and what are their motives. And it works well as that.
So Ghost Protocol was like two...
Ghost Protocol was...
Yeah.
Yeah, it was two back. It's Fallout's more like Rogue Nation.
Okay.
Where, I mean, the action scenes are still very good. Mm-hmm. I don't think they reach the peak of the two best action scenes in Ghost Protocol. There's one where he's climbing the tallest building in the world, and he has two suction cups.
Oh, I remember that scene.
One of which fails.
Yeah.
And then there's the wonderful scene at the end where they're in this modernized parking garage, and he's trying to negotiate the garage, and it's kind of like an elevator, as components of an elevator, and they compartmentalize the cars.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah,
so
yeah.
Okay. It's pretty good. It's really good. The cars are falling all over the place. He's moving around. It's not only exciting, but fun in Ghost Protocol.
I must confess, I haven't seen any of these last three ones, Fallout, Ghost Protocol, or what was the other one?
Rogue Nation.
I haven't seen those three.
Yeah, so there's a little more involved with the characters here.
How is Henry Cavill in it?
He's good.
He's good? Okay.
He's good. I mistook him for a minute for Wes Bentley.
Oh, wow. Okay. I can't believe that was said, but all right.
It's been so long since
okay.
Wes Bentley's been in a film. But I saw his name in the credits, and then I'm like, that's not Wes Bentley.
Yeah.
But I'm like, well, maybe it's been that long since I've seen Wes Bentley in a film.
No.
But no, you're right. It was Henry Cavill. That is kind of the, I don't want to say adversary, but they're working together, Henry Cavill's character and Ethan Hawke.
Mm-hmm.
And he's supposed to be where Ethan Hawke wants to... He has a little more tact mm-hmm. in the mission.
Mm-hmm.
And as Henry Cavill's character says in the picture, Ethan Hawke wants to use a scalpel, Henry Cavill wants to use a sledgehammer.
Okay.
So kind of the tact between the two characters.
So you would recommend Mission Impossible?
Yeah, okay. It was a lot of fun. It's about 2.5 hours, but it moves along pretty quick.
Okay, cool.
Which I normally don't say about 2.5
hours. Yeah, yeah, usually.
Yeah.
What was the other one you crammed in?
Blindspotting. Which is terrific. I'd say it's somewhere between. It's probably right behind "Won't You Be My Neighbor" as one of the best films I've seen this year.
So, what is Blindspotting? What's the plot?
It's set in modern day Oakland.
Go ahead. Sorry. Describe for the listener. Sorry.
It's more or less about a. Well, it is about a felon, mm-hmm. a convicted felon who's during his last 3 days of his probationary period. And he has certain things that he can't have done. He's a black man growing up in Oakland, and his best friend, who he's known from 11 or 12, is a white man. And his friend, though, is a big-time troublemaker. So it deals with the preconceived notions about a black man and a white man growing up in Oakland and kind of the struggles that they're going through. And he sometimes pushes the limits with the things that are going on under his probationary period,
mm-hmm.
of which he has, and it counts you down. It's basically a 3 day time frame.
Okay.
From 3 days left. The evening of his third day left.
Mm-hmm.
It's about, I don't know, maybe 9 o'clock or so, to the morning of his day after probation.
Okay.
Yeah, and he witnesses a shooting of a black man by a white cop. So that plays into his struggle and
okay.
what he's going through, and it's really well thought out. The characters sometimes aren't what they seem,
mm-hmm.
Or what I should say, what the other characters' preconceived notions are, and it deals. That's a big part thematically of what Blindspotting is trying to get at.
And I think it's gotten a lot of buzz too when it debuted at. I don't remember what film festival, but I remember hearing about this film on NPR, if I remember correctly. And yeah, it does sound very, very interesting. So that is a solid recommendation. Go see it.
Yeah, it's terrific. It's again, it's a completely well-rounded piece,
mm-hmm.
That gives air to all sides and all viewpoints.
Okay,
and it's pretty hard-hitting.
I'm going to throw one out there that wasn't a theatrical release, but it came out here just a couple weeks ago, the Robin Williams documentary. Did you happen to catch that?
I did not.
It's good, but it's weird in which they present the narrative. I don't think I've seen a documentary where the person that the documentary is a subject of is actually narrating it, and that was a little bit weird for me. Because Robin Williams does a lot of, like, they pulled stuff from interviews and that, and okay. he does a lot of the narration, which at first was very off-putting, because I just wasn't ready for that, and maybe a little bit creeped out by that. But I also didn't understand why they were doing that, because I'm used to, you know, for an example, and I used this example before, the Andre the Giant documentary that HBO did. Well, you have all the people like Hulk Hogan, and all the people talking about Andre, and then you would insert the little interview clips. Where there, it's reversed in this one. Where you had Robin Williams doing most of the narration, and then there'd be snippets of people talking about him. Overall, I liked it. I gave it a B. I thought it was good. But that kind of just... It took me a while to get used to that. Like, I just was thrown off by it. And I don't know if that's just because I haven't seen a documentary presented that way or what. But it just really kind of threw me off a little bit.
Yeah, I really like Robin Williams. I didn't always like everything he did, at least theatrically. Yeah, I think he made... probably more than a few missteps.
Oh, yeah.
But I mean, when he delivered a performance,
mm-hmm.
I mean, it was terrific. He started to get, and I don't know if this was reflective of what he was dealing with, but he started to do more darker films.
And they were talking about that. They talked about that, especially 1 Hour Photo.
Yeah.
They talked a lot about that.
Yeah, that was probably the darkest. It was also probably one of his best performances.
Yes, I agree. I agree.
He was terrific in that. He was in Christopher Nolan's Insomnia.
Right, which was very good.
Yeah.
Very well done.
And again, he's doing a darker turn. And of course, he was terrific, and this isn't dark, but he was terrific in Good Will Hunting.
Right, yes.
Not to mention, of course, all the other
Patch Adams
comedic performances.
Yeah, Mrs. Doubtfire. Yeah, right. Yeah.
Right. And I enjoyed his television. I mean, I grew up during the Mork and Mindy era. I enjoyed him as Mork from Ork. And his stand-up. His stand-up was really good, too.
Yeah, yeah. So, overall, I really liked it. It just took me a little bit of, it was a little bit uncomfortable at the beginning. Like I said, just not seeing it, or just not used to seeing something presented.
Someone close from his family must have produced the picture in order to be able to use...
Well, that's one funny thing, because a fellow podcaster, Mike McG, pointed that out when we were talking about this. They only interview one kid, and they only interview one ex-wife. So what happened to the other ones? They didn't seem to, like, you know what I mean? Like, you would think, why isn't all three kids? Because he had three kids, one of which is Zelda, who's done quite a bit of stuff herself, you know what I mean? Has got some acting credentials herself. But yeah, so I don't know why there wasn't more from some of the other people in his life. That is a question that Mike posed, and I'm like, yeah, you know what? You're probably correct.
But when you mentioned that he was the narrator, that makes me think someone had to have license to use his voice to plug in during this part.
True. Yeah, probably. What do you have else on your list there?
Another kind of racially infused film, but really good as well, is a film called Sorry to Bother You.
Yes, I've heard about independent this. Film. Yeah, yeah. You liked it?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's a tale of an African-American man that starts as kind of a telemarketer,
mm-hmm.
selling things, and then he works his way up within the company and succeeds, while his coworkers remain on the bottom level and are trying to work for what they deem to be a reasonable wage. And it grapples with kind of the socioeconomic system that's in place. And it's a very strange film. I don't want to give away some of the big twists, but Armie Hammer is the CEO of the company that he works for. He also...
Armie Hammer.
He's terrific in the film, though. I mean, he is a great foe in the film to have. But yeah, it's one of a kind.
Okay.
Most people have not seen a film like Sorry to Bother You.
Okay. All right. It's got, from what I understand, it's got that real unique, like, Michael Gondry type of cinematography to it, or...
There's a video that is a corporate video.
Oh, okay.
That they're eventually going to release to sell what Armie Hammer is doing at his company.
Okay.
It is, yes, it's exactly like something that Michael Gondry would have produced.
Produced back in the day. Okay. Anything else? I got one more on my list here. You got any?
There's a Netflix documentary, which we did for our podcast, called Set It Up.
And what's that about? I saw that.
It's very good. It's really a charming picture. I knew from the outset, I didn't know that I was going to like it, but I was sold. I really wanted to watch it just based on the pitch that my co-host, it was his idea to watch and review the film. It's about two workers that meet, and they're both overburdened by the amount of time that their job requires because their boss is so overbearing.
Okay.
And they come up with the idea that if they set up their bosses, that's all they need to get out of the office, that their bosses will start spending time and they won't be in the office as much and won't be as demanding of their time because they'll actually have a life outside of their work.
Okay.
So
who's in this? Who stars in this? Do you know offhand?
Don't remember.
So they set them up again for the
Tate Diggs. Yeah, Tate Diggs and Lucy Liu, who are both very good in the picture.
Okay,
they're the bosses that are overbearing.
Okay,
Zoe Deutsch and Glenn Powell. The younger.
So they set them up to date, in other words, and get out of the office and have a social life.
Yes.
Okay.
And right. they just kind of run into each other while they're both scrambling for a late night dinner for their bosses.
Okay.
And they end up fighting and bartering and selling. One of them, Pal's character, sells it to Deutsch's character.
Okay. Gotcha. But,
those two are terrific together in all this right. picture. And they don't come out with romantic comedies enough in the theaters anymore. I mean, those are few and far between. That something like this, I don't know why it couldn't have played in the theater and done well.
Weirdly enough, I also have a documentary. Well, it's a documentary, I mean, but weirdly enough, it's also a streaming movie that I saw. I believe it came out last fall, but I watched it this year. Batman and Bill, which is on Hulu. It's the documentary of Bill Finger was the co-creator of Batman, along with Bob Kane. And quite frankly, not to pull any punches, Bob Kane screwed Bill Finger over a lot. And Bill Finger did not get the credit that he deserved for creating Batman and various other characters. And it talks about the filmmaker's desire to get the credit for Bill that he so deserved. And it's really well done. I did give it a B because it does lag a little bit towards the tail end because they find, you know, because I guess with copyright law or trademark law, they had to find a living relative of Bill Finger, and he didn't. And they found this, they actually found a relative. It was actually a daughter that nobody knew existed because it had been, it's a weird set of circumstances. So they basically, they talked to this girl into stepping up in court and showing who she is. She's Bill Finger's daughter, illegitimate daughter. You know, well, actually, she wasn't illegitimate. I apologize. She wasn't illegitimate. She was just not known because I believe the marriage fell apart, if I remember correctly. And so her and the mother went and moved far, far away. Bill Finger went ahead and lived his life. And so it was very well done. It was interesting. And it, again, unfortunately, it's one of those things where you're like, wow, you had such a great thing. You created an empire of Batman and you couldn't give a little bit of credit, Bob Kane. You know, you couldn't have given a small little bit of money to Bill Finger. But overall, I liked it, so I recommend it.
It sounds interesting. I mean, both of the documentaries that you watched, you know, really sound interesting.
Yeah.
And the ones on Hulu, what the Robin Williams documentary?
Was it's on HBO.
Okay.
That was an HBO Films. So, okay. Yeah. So I want to talk real quickly about, you want to talk about what's coming up?
Yeah.
Real quick,
yeah,
we'll run down a few things that are coming up there. And so what do you got that's interesting you that's coming up here?
I guess you couldn't get much different with some of the ones that are coming out here soon. Black Klansman is the new Spike Lee joint.
I'm really looking forward to that one.
I'm hoping because his films have been, for lack of a better term, more or less insignificant recently, Spike Lee's. And I think it's because he'd had so many that kind of flopped, that weren't very good. I've seen the trailer a few times. This one looks terrific. I'm hoping it's as good as I hope it can be, and I hope it's as good as Spike Lee used to be because he used to be a great filmmaker, and he still has it in him. I'm hoping that Black Klansman is the remedy for.
I'm looking forward to that too. I'm looking forward to at the end of August, and I'm not a big fan of Melissa McCarthy, but Happy Time Murders looks pretty funny.
That could be.
That looks really, really, really. Off the wall, crazy, but I like it. I from what I saw on the trailer, I might have to go check that one out.
I like the idea. Now
we'll see.
It's
going to be raunchy.
It's probably going to be raunchy. Yeah, but it could go horribly wrong.
Right. Yeah.
It could also be horribly right.
Correct.
I don't know why I'm a sucker for some of these type of films. I enjoy it. Well, Jaws is the epitome.
Jaws is fantastic.
But I also really enjoyed Deep Blue Sea. I don't know if you saw that.
I did not see it.
That is the last time I can remember my butt leaving the seat based on what I saw. That I was just so shocked by an event in the picture that my butt left the seat. But I'm looking forward to. I've seen the trailer. I think I'm hoping it delivers is the Meg.
It's kind of
prehistoric shark that's just going to go nuts.
And Jason Statham's going to fight him.
Yes.
So enough said.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
I'm looking forward to Welcome to Marwen, which is the Steve Carell film that's coming out, I believe, November or December.
Yeah, yeah, that's on my list, too.
Based on a true story. Yes. And if you've never seen the documentary that preceded this one.
Yeah, that's a terrific film.
That is an awesome documentary. It's fascinating on so many levels. So I'm really excited for that one.
Yeah. And that's directed by Robert Zemeckis.
Right, yes.
So it sounds like it's in the right hands.
Yes, yes. Anything else? What else do you have?
A little more mainstream fare that I guess I'm more curious. I really enjoyed Creed, so I'm hoping Creed 2 picks up where Creed left off. I enjoyed Wreck-It Ralph, and I've watched that a few times with my kids, so I'm curious to see what kind of goofiness they come up with Ralph Breaks the Internet.
Venom is coming out as well.
Venom, yes. I have that on my list.
I don't know. I'm kind of on the fence on that one. Some of the trailers don't really inspire me to go see it. But Tom Hardy is awful good in many, many things I've seen of his.
And I like that they're featuring they're featuring a bad guy, which we don't get.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of the last time.
Deadpool is somewhat of a bad guy, but not, you know.
Yeah, I think we're still supposed to err on the side that he's on the good guy.
Good guy side, yeah. So.
And only because David Gordon Green is directing it, and they have Jamie Lee Curtis back. But I'm intrigued by the
Halloween.
I'll bite on the Halloween.
Okay.
I'm curious.
And that is a Danny McBride script, too, right? I believe Danny McBride wrote Halloween, the new one. That's right. Yeah. Really? Yeah. Danny McBride from Eastbound and Down.
I'm assuming there's not going to be humor. Well,
I don't think so, but I'm pretty sure.
It's supposed to be a comedy.
No. I'm pretty sure it's written by him. So, yeah, so it should be interesting. Which Halloween, I think the original one's fantastic.
Yes.
It's great. It's absolutely phenomenal.
To me, it's right up there with anything that the horror genre has provided us throughout time.
Yeah.
And then on a smaller scale, but I assume it'll still be a fairly big hit, is Bohemian Rhapsody.
Oh, yes. That looks really well done. I mean, and Rami Malek looks like Freddie Mercury.
Yeah.
It's scary how they resemble each other. Yeah. But yeah, that's in November, if I remember correctly, too.
Yes, and Bryan Singer is signed on to direct.
Yeah, so that should be good. Really looking forward to that one. Anything else that you got coming up?
Not off the top of my head, I just kind of crammed that.
I got
that's some cramming research there before the show. There are a few films I'm missing here.
Probably, but that's alright. You know what? How about this? I'm going to pitch an idea at you. There was a couple other films I wanted to talk about, but we're getting real close to our time limit. You want to maybe... We'll wrap this one up and maybe talk about these other films on a separate episode, kind of. Would you be fine with that?
Sure.
Okay, because we're getting up to about an hour here. So let's go ahead and wrap up here, and then I will have another one because there's some other films I want to get your take on that I've seen that are not recent films. These are films from the 90s or 80s or 70s in some instances. So, but Paul, tell folks where they can find all the information that they need to know about for Filmbound Pod.
We're at filmboundpod.com. We're also available on iHeartRadio and Spotify and some other streaming services out there.
Gotcha. Is there social media places where folks can keep tabs on?
At Filmbound on Twitter.
Okay.
And then we have a Facebook page as well.
Cool. There you go. Well, Paul, thanks for coming back.
Thanks a lot for having me.
No problem. All right. With that, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to throw it to a quick break, and on the other side of the break, I'll be back to wrap up this episode. Well, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. My conversation with Paul Markoff. We're talking about movies, and we talked about the ones that came out for the first half of 2018. And no doubt, Paul will be back on to talk about and to recap those films that are coming out in the later half of 2018. And as I mentioned in the intro, hopefully it didn't spoil too much for you. I don't think we gave away any key parts to any movies, but we did express some of the things that we liked and some of the things that we didn't like about those particular set of films, and sometimes that spoils things. And don't forget to check out the podcast that Paul is the co-host of, filmboundpod.com. There's going to be a link over on the links section of pvdcast.com for you all. And with that, I think I just need to let you know where you can get in touch with me. Say you want to complain about my thoughts on Solo or Deadpool 2 or any of the other movies that we talked about in this episode. Well, you can do that a couple of different ways. First,
you can get in touch with me via email, johnorlando@pvdcast.com. You can find me on Twitter at PVDMVP. You can also find me over on the Facebook page of the PVDcast, that being, of course, facebook.com/PVDcast. And you can leave me a message over there if you like. And hey, let me tell you where you can find this podcast, as if you don't already know. But you know what? Maybe you want to tell the person that's in the cubicle next to you. Maybe you want to tell your friends. Maybe you want to tell your aunt. I don't know who you want to tell, but tell them that they can get the PVDcast a variety of different places, including PVDcast.com, the online home of yours truly. Or it's available through iTunes, Stitcher Radio, Google Play, Pod Paradise, SoundCloud, the Echo Network, Spotify now, and a few other possible avenues here real soon where you can find the PVDcast. So with that being said, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to get on out of here. I thank you for listening. I will chat at each and every one of you later. Stay righteous. Stay independent.